From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, those open lines. Here's what's happening. Breaking story tonight. Legendary boxer Muhammad Ali is dead. He died at a Phoenix area hospital after being hospitalized for respiratory issues that are complicated by his Parkinson's disease. The great one was 74 years old. Ali suffered Parkinson's for three decades, most famously trembling badly while lighting the Olympic torch in 1996 in Atlanta. Despite this disease, he kept up a busy appearance schedule until recently. Legendary boxer Muhammad Ali, dead at the age of 74. Multiple salmonella outbreaks have sickened now at least 324 people in 35 states. According to the CDC, salmonella outbreaks involving seven different strains of the bacteria have been identified by the officials. Confirmed by lab testing, of those sickened, 66 have been hospitalized. One death has been reported. Got to be careful. Wash your food, folks. Wash your food. And more on that UCLA shooting episode. A former UCLA graduate student killed his estranged wife in Minnesota, then drove to Los Angeles and murdered one of his former professors, and then turned the gun on himself and killed himself. So the woman in Minnesota apparently was his estranged wife. A construction worker in Florida has been arrested after authorities say he buried his boss in dirt using a front-end loader. Citing an arrest report, the 32-year-old was charged with aggravated battery. The boss is okay, but he suffered a large cut on his head. Listen to this one. Police in North Carolina looking for a North Carolina woman after authorities say her mother's body was found in a freezer that she sold at a yard sale. How would you like to buy that, open it up, and find a body inside? My gosh. And also in North Carolina, a woman who sparked outrage after posting a photo of her dog with its mouth duct taped shut on Facebook has now been found guilty of animal cruelty. That's good. The U.S. economy created the fewest number of jobs in more than 5 years in May, hurt by a strike by Verizon workers and a fall in goods producing employment. And that could make it difficult for the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates. Registered investment advisor Michael Shedlock with us. Mish, I have a feeling they may not raise these rates because of this.
Well, they're not going to raise rates, George. The heading into this, all these Fed governors, we saw a parade of them last week. Six of them came out saying they were pretty much saying that they were going to hike in June or July. And I'm sitting there shaking my head and I'm saying, well, I don't believe it. And when the jobs report hit today, I tweeted, odds of a rate hike now are zero. And indeed, they plunged all the way to 4% from 40% in July. So, but looking into the details of this jobs report today, George, it was an absolute disaster.
Sure was.
Close to 500,000 people are moved from full-time employment to part-time employment. You didn't hear that. A half a million people. Mainstream media did not comment on that at all. The unemployment rate dropped 0.3% today, but that was because nearly a half a million people dropped out of the labor force. So we lost full-time jobs. We only gained minuscule 30,000 jobs, 34,000 jobs. On the establishment survey, 20,000 on the household survey. Last month, the household survey, they have two different surveys. One is, you know, they survey the establishments. One is a phone survey. Last month, the phone surveys showed a 306,000 loss in employment. This month, it followed through. Last month, I tweeted on my blog. I said, one of these months, we're going to see a follow-through, and we saw it this month, George.
Yep.
Not good news.
Not a good trend at all, Mish. Thanks so much. When Elon Musk makes a proclamation, people stand up and take notice. At the Code Conference in California, Musk reiterated one of his boldest claims to date, saying that if all goes according to plan, his company SpaceX will start flying people to Mars by 2024. This is an ambitious goal, more so than any nation or private company. Let's check in with space historian and our science advisor, Robert Zimmerman. That's not too far away, Robert.
You know, George, there's a reason why people pay attention to Elon Musk when he says this. NASA and the government have been making the same kind of claims about what they're going to achieve for the last 40 years. But for them to get anything accomplished, they got to get a lot of people to agree. They got to get Congress, they got to get the public, they got to get bureaucrats to agree, they got to get management and NASA to agree. And the end result is that no one ever can agree, and it doesn't happen. But Elon Musk doesn't have to get anyone to agree. He just has to make a profit and then use the profit to do what he wants. And what he wants to do is brilliant. Just like getting his first stage of the Falcon 9 landed, he says, look, we're launching the rocket. Why not take advantage of every launch and try to land the first stage? Take advantage of the opportunity. Well, he said that what he's going to do is he's going to be firing a Dragon capsule to Mars with every launch opportunity that comes up beginning in 2018. So that means in 2018 they're going to launch a Dragon capsule to Mars, learn something from that, ramp it up and do it again in 2020, learn something from that. Ramp it up and do it again in 2022, learn something from that. Now, whether he'll actually fly people in 2024, it's hard to say, but that's a lot. You know, at the pace that they have been developing their technology, George, I wouldn't put it past Elon Musk to be capable of sending a crew to Mars by that date. It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest.
He's aggressive. Robert, thank you so much. In most radio markets, right before our program, there's a program called Ground Zero, and the host of that show is Clyde Lewis. And Clyde's going to be at the Contact in the Desert with me this coming weekend. How hot is it out there, Clyde?
Well, I feel like I'm in an oven. It's cool now because it's a beautiful night here in Joshua Tree. But, man, when I came here, I felt like I was in saran wrap. I was covered in, I was just like, you wouldn't believe it. I mean, and I couldn't believe I came from Portland where it was raining and it was nice and cool. Now here I am. Raining myself because it's so hot.
They say it's going to be 115 tomorrow when I'm out there doing the panel at about 4 o'clock. 115, Clyde.
Well, they have to have good weather for you, George. You know that. So that's what. And of course, your birthday. I mean, your birthday is fantastic. I'm so excited about that. That George Osoukos just walked out, but he's standing right in front of me.
Oh, they're all there. Everybody's there. This is a who's who of contact, isn't it?
I'm in so well right now. I watch this guy at Ancient Aliens all the time, and he's standing right in front of me. It's so cool.
How high up is his hair, his hairdo?
It's looking pretty good. His hair is awesome. It's always perfect. He's there. He's
I love it. So you've got events coming up too, don't you?
Yes, I will be hosting a panel with Whitley Strieber and a number of other people. I'm really excited about that. And we're going to be heading out to Roswell at the end of the month. Going to be with Don Schmidt and Jimmy Church and everybody there. I'm just so excited. We're doing a lot of traveling, and I think that's awesome. My health's getting better, so I can travel.
Good.
I'm so excited I can travel now.
Super. Hey, I look forward to seeing you, Clyde. I'll see you in a couple hours.
I am, too. I'll have to take a number. I know I will, but I still want to see you.
You always get a front line. You know that.
I love you, man.
All right.
Take care.
Clyde Lewis, who hosts the show Ground Zero. Up next, we're going to talk about the big book of practical spells. But first, you've got to hear this latest UFO report from Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Oh, Peter, what do you got for us this week?
Boy, you're right, George. A lot of really dramatic stuff has happened over the last week or so. But a couple prefaces here. Happy birthday, by the way. It doesn't seem fair you should be in the 115-degree heat on your birthday, but I wish you the best tomorrow down there.
Thanks,
in
Peter.
Joshua Tree. Awfully sad news about Muhammad Ali.
Oh, yeah.
I remember being in Ferguson, Missouri as a kid back in the late 50s, watching him box, and was just roundly impressed with the guy. And I think of all the diplomatic work he's done on behalf of the United States and the American people. We've lost a great one. And I'd like to think that dramatic meteor that went over Nevada and Arizona, particularly Phoenix, yesterday morning, the 2nd of June, might have in some way heralded his departure from this planet. It was really a dramatic event. I thought we would have had photographs on our website by now, but they should be up showing the contrail or the smoky trail that meteor left over Phoenix. It was really quite an event. I'm glad it wasn't an asteroid that hit the ground.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Would have been dramatic. But going to touch on three very interesting cases. Well, I'll preface with a follow-up to a case I talked about, I think it was 3 weeks ago, 13th of May, when I was down in McMinnville. I talked about a couple who were on a sailboat that they were awakened by the rocking of the sailboat and light streaming in their cabin through the portholes and through the cracks in their doors. Have more information. We posted more information to our website about that one. The interesting thing, the reason I mentioned it again, George, is that sailboat mast was rocking, they estimated, through 30 to 40 degrees of arc. When the husband went up on the deck, there were no waves. There was no disturbance on the surface of the lake. Very interesting. People might enjoy reading that report for the 6th of May, Lake Coeur d'Alene. 1 week ago tonight, two people, both medical professionals, were working in East Point, Michigan. One of them went inside and called the other one out and said, "Hey, look at what I see here in the north sky." They both looked to the north sky and were shocked to see a relatively small blue light moving slowly from west to east in the northern sky. It stopped after about a minute of movement and hovered. About a minute later, it dropped three or possibly four objects, all of them blue, out of the bottom of that craft. They roamed around for about a minute and returned to the craft, George, and allegedly went it back into the ventral surface of that craft. About a minute later, the object turned vivid red, from blue to red, and hovered there for a short period of time and then dropped vertically down, disappeared from their sight. Very interesting case, given that this object was probably less than 5 miles away from Selfridge Air Force Base. I'd like to know what kind of communications took place between the air traffic control tower at Selfridge Air Force Base and the command structure in Washington, D.C. But that report is posted to our website, and I encourage people to read it. About 45 or 50 minutes later, a gentleman down in Port Charlotte, Florida, went outside of his home to close his garage door for the night. His attention was drawn by an orange glowing light across the street from him. He looked at it. This gentleman is a multi-thousand-hour instrument-rated pilot. Looked across the street, was utterly shocked to see a discus-shaped object. He estimated it was about 150 feet away from him, 60 feet in diameter, about 20 feet thick at the center. He raced inside to get his camera and to bring his girlfriend outside to see it. She declined coming out. She regrets that now. He didn't get a photograph of it because just as he got outside with the camera, the object accelerated like a bullet out of a rifle and disappeared from his sight in, he estimates, 1 to 1.5 seconds. It was gone. It covered probably, he estimates, 15,000 yards in under 2 seconds from a dead stop. Very, very interesting report. The next night, Saturday, the 28th of May, gentleman was outside his home in Aurora, Colorado. He's an amateur astronomer, an astronomy photographer. His attention was drawn to a blood-red object in the western sky. You've got to read his description of this object, George. It was just below Jupiter in the western sky. Mm. It started falling with a falling leaf technique or style.
Like a feather.
Like a feather. And it started changing colors from red to green to red to green. It suddenly shot off to his right, to the north, disappeared from his sight. Shortly after it shot off, three more objects assembled at the point where the object had been hovering. So there's lots going on. All of these reports are posted to our website, and seems to me the UFO phenomenon is heating up, but I'll keep coast-to-coast listeners apprised of what's going on.
You got it. Peter, thanks so much. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Up next, we're going to talk about the big book of practical spells. That's right. We're going to teach you spells. Judica Illis joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. All right, welcome back to Coast Friday night and this Saturday morning. Our special guest, Judica Illis. Judica was with me almost 2 years ago as we talked about the Encyclopedia of Witchcraft and some other special things that she has done. But this time we're going to talk about the big book of practical spells. Everyday magic that works. I'm looking forward to this. I want to learn some spells, Judica.
That's great.
I want to cast curses on people. No, you don't do that. You're a good person.
You know, curses tend to backfire.
They do.
They cause more trouble than they're worth. Usually, you know, what do they say? The best revenge is living well.
That's right.
The best spells.
And you know what? You know. And who needs revenge? Move on, right?
Yeah. Just, you know, live the best life you can.
But I've been reading it all day today, and it's neat. I mean, you've done a very thorough job with this.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot coming from you.
Now, tell us a little bit about how you put it together.
Well, this book was not actually the book that I set out to write. I have a gigantic manuscript that has never been published devoted to traditional methods of healing infertility and boosting fertility. And for a variety of reasons, that book has never been published, but it had a chapter of magic spells in it. And I had a publisher who turned me down and said, could you take this chapter and create a book on a course in spell casting, you know, a way of teaching other people to cast spells. And it's something I've always loved ever since I was a child, you know, from fairy tales to, you know, the legendary witches of New York in the 1980s.
Yeah.
Just a topic that's always fascinated me. And so I said, sure, I could do that.
There was a story that broke today, too, by the way, that men are becoming more and more interested in becoming witches.
Yes.
And it's growing at an astounding rate.
Yes, you don't have to be a woman to be a witch. Anybody can be a witch. You just have to be a human being. I am in New Orleans this weekend it's a conference of magical people from all different perspectives and spiritual traditions, Hexfest.
How cool.
And you know, it used to be that you would go to these conferences and it's 90% women. Not anymore. It's
balanced now. Yeah.
Very close. Yeah, which is a really nice thing.
It is balanced. Now, exactly what does it mean to be casting a spell? What is a spell?
I always compare it to back in the day when the Curies, when Marie and Pierre were searching for radioactivity, people mock them. You know, now, you know, they're Nobel Prize winners and they're in all the school texts and, you know, everybody's, oh, Marie Curie, you know, what great people. But at that time, they were mocked. People didn't believe their tales of that they were searching for this energy. Magical spells seek to harness this energy that at least as of yet can't really be quantified. We don't know how to measure it, and we don't know how to quantify it, although maybe someday we will. It is an energy that emanates from everything that is natural on Earth, whether it's crystals or stones or places, colors, sounds. The ancient Greeks thought vowels had tremendous magic power. And you can feel it. And I think we've all felt it, even though we don't always know what it is that we're feeling. We have all walked into a room and felt it was creepy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Something wrong with it. And sometimes all you have to do, you know, it's like feng shui, which is an ancient magical art. Sometimes all you have to do is redecorate a little bit. You move things around, and all of a sudden, the room feels better.
All right, Judica, hold on. We're going to come back after this break, and we're going to talk more about your latest work, The Big Book of Practical Spells. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Judica Illis with us as we're talking about her work, The Big Book of Practical Spells, and it's really cool because there are spells in here for just about everything in a positive way, Judica. You've yeah. done it the positive way.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. Of course. You know, you don't want dark and evil, do you?
No.
But there are some people who do that.
Magic spells themselves have a neutral energy. Angry people cast angry spells. So, you know, it is better to avoid angry, resentful, envious people, because whether it is, you know, a magic spell is conscious. It's a conscious harnessing of magical energy, which is something that we use all the time, whether or not we're conscious of it. But angry, resentful, jealous people, that's the type of energy they are putting off, whether it is conscious or unconscious. And we all have a bad day. You know, we all have an angry day. But when someone is consistently like that, it's not healthy.
No, it is not. Now, when we talk about casting spells on people, mm-hmm. does that person have to know it's being done?
The
receiver.
No. The receiver does not. Nor do you have to believe in it for it to work. That's a fallacy, that a spell won't work if you don't believe in it.
For the receiver, but the person giving the spell has to believe it, right?
No. I think what the person giving it has to believe is the possibility that life could get better, the possibility that you could achieve your desires. If you are entrenched in the belief that life cannot get better, that you're stuck, sometimes that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. There is a section in that book on why spells don't work, because they don't always work, or they don't always work the way we want them to.
Why not?
Sometimes because we have conflicted emotions, we're ambivalent, we ask for something that we don't really want. You know, we cast a spell for a raise or a promotion, but really deep in our heart, we don't want that job. So sometimes it's like driving with the parking brakes on.
Who's the editorialist for spells? I mean, is there some kind of a mystical spirit world? And they look at these spells that come in and they go, nah, that's not for him.
Sometimes, I think so. Occasionally, I think sometimes whatever the powers that be are in the universe, I think they save us from ourselves. I think we have all, you know, depending how old you are, you can look back. I think we have all sometimes in our life really wanted something, and years later, we're grateful we didn't get it.
Well, there is that possibility. Remember the Dr. Faustus book?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
he sold his soul to the devil because he wanted, you know, riches and all kinds of things.
Wisdom, yeah. And it didn't work out. And there are two different versions of that. There's a happy ending of that story and a not so happy ending of that
That's
story.
Right.
There is a version where he manages to get out of the deal at the end.
Huh. I don't know if you can get out of the deal with the devil in real life.
I don't know. It's the more pious version is he repents and has remorse, and I think God saves him.
Is it dangerous to cast a spell?
I would say the biggest danger, it's like the monkey's paw. Sometimes you get what you ask for.
Yeah.
So be very careful what you ask for.
That's true. Sometimes you can't stop it either. Once you start it in motion...
There is a tendency sometimes for one spell to lead to another. You request something and you really work towards something and then you don't understand the repercussions. Let's say you are deeply in love with someone and you're sure that this is the person who you are meant to be with, and then you realize that they are a violent person or an aggressive person or a harmful person, and you have to try to extricate yourself from the situation that you have chosen for yourself.
Some people, like you say, wish for something, and then they realize that's not what they want. It wasn't what they expected.
Yeah.
So can they change it? Can they get out of it?
Yes. Oh, yeah, usually. There is such a thing. There is a type of a love spell called a binding spell, which is the goal to bind yourself to someone who, in general, these are spells of last resort. These are spells, you know, you sense the other person leaving and it's an attempt to make them stay. And you can perhaps make them stay, but you cannot make them be a different person than they are. And I always recommend against those, because it is very hard to, if you have done the job well, it is difficult to untangle that web. But yes, you know, there is no curse that doesn't have an antidote. There is no spell that can't be broken. It's just some of them are harder than others. And, you know, it's a lot of effort and unhappiness.
All right, give us an example of a spell. Just kind of lay it out for us. Do you need to buy anything, get any, you know?
There are all different kinds of spells. I have another book called 5,000 Spells, and it has 5,000 spells in it. There are spells can be cast with priceless, expensive items, and they can be cast just with words. People are casting spells with emojis on their phone now. So there's nothing you can't cast a spell with. Let me give you a simple example, because this is something that mainly you get the ingredients from the supermarket or your kitchen cabinet. It's for luck or to achieve a goal. And the first thing you have to do is know what that goal is. And the clearer and more specific your goal, the more likely your spell is to work and to work the way you want it. The thing that probably will not come from a supermarket, you need a new pack of playing cards. Take the four aces out of the deck and put those four aces on a plate, like a saucer, a plate.
So well, you're using the aces as opposed to the rest of the cards?
You're only using the aces.
All right.
The aces symbolize beginnings. So it is something that you want to, either for general luck or something you want, new work, new love, new money, better health, something like that. And now you sprinkle breadcrumbs over it.
Breadcrumbs? How come?
Breadcrumbs. And you can use it with manufactured breadcrumbs, although I think that just getting a piece of bread from your kitchen and just crumble it into little pieces and sprinkle that on top of it, and then sprinkle some sugar on top of it. Sugar's power is that it's a drawing agent. And think about when you walk past a bakery. As you walk past a bakery, you have that urge to go in and, you know, buy a cookie. It's the sugar pulling you in the same way that salt is a purifying agent. Salt is often used to keep out ghosts. Sugar is intended to draw you in, to lure in good fortune or whatever it is that you want to draw. And then you take a candle, a plain white candle, hold it in your hands, and see your goal. Really see it as if it's achieved. So because spells are most effective if they're cast in the present tense.
All right, honestly, if you're doing that and somebody walks in, there you've got four aces on a plate.
Crazy.
You've got breadcrumbs and sugar and a candle in your hand. Yeah, they're going to think you're nuts, right?
Yeah, well, it depends what kind of a household you're in, but they could, which is, you know, privacy is sometimes a major component of spells. You can make this a little bit more powerful by, if you've got charms, little metal charms to put on the plate too. A heart if you want love, little horseshoe if you want luck, just, you know, something inexpensive that you're just going to put to symbolize it and to make it more concrete in your head. see your goal as you're holding the candle, put the candle on the plate, and burn it. And that's it.
How important is an affirmation with the spell?
Affirmations are excellent. Language is important, and being precise with language. You will buy a lot of books that will give you fancy words that you don't know what they mean. I would advise against that. Don't cast a spell using words you don't understand because you don't know what you're asking for. Simple language in the present tense because you want it now. Motown songs are, you know, if you can't think of what to say, Motown songs, Berry Gordy instructed his songwriters to write in the present tense, he's back in my arms again. Not, he will be back in my arms again next week. Because, and this is hard. It sounds easier than it actually is. You have to visualize yourself healthy if that's what you want to be. Even though, you know, if you were healthy, you wouldn't be doing this. If you were happy, you wouldn't be doing it. But you have to almost like manifest it in your head. And the word, one of the definitions or the roots of the word witch, it's similar to wick in a candle. It's to bend. It's sort of bending reality and creating the destiny that you want, as opposed to sort of just being buffeted by fate. So a lot of it is in your head.
How many different kinds of spells are there?
Oh, my God. We could come up, there are like grains of sand on the beach. And there are new ones being born every day.
And can you cast a spell for just about anything?
Yeah, you can cast it. If you can visualize it, then you can cast a spell. Positive spells are easier. I will be prosperous rather than I won't be broke. I will be happy rather than I won't be sad. So that sort of positive, a lot of new thought, a lot of power of positive thinking derives from these occult arts, although they may deny it. But those are the roots. I mean, spellcasting is so ancient. It's our common human heritage. You can go anywhere in the world, you will probably find ghost stories and magic spells.
How did you get involved in all of this, Judica?
Oh, I just always loved it. We had books on the shelf. I was an accident. I was a happy accident. My parents were not expecting me. I have a sister who's 12 years older than me. My parents were older, and we had books on shelves. And my mother taught herself to read English by teaching me how to read, so I learned to read very young. And they pretty much, if I didn't bother them, they let me read everything, and I did.
Do you need to chant when you put these spells together?
No. I mean, some people like to do it. You can. You don't have to. Some people like to rhyme. I am not a great rhymer, so I don't rhyme, but I know people who can rhyme at the drop of a hat, and they do.
Now, you were earlier saying some of the times the spell does not work. How come?
Spells are not a cake mix. I think that is people, you know, if you, I call it the Willow Rosenberg School of spellcasting. If you watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know, Willow would, the resident witch would go and she would get ingredients. And if she did it correctly, it always worked. But spells are not a cake mix. Spells are, they're a mystery of the universe. And sometimes they work better than we anticipate. And sometimes they work a little differently. It's an art. And one of the joys, it will help you find your own personal power and what you are good at magically. Because the spell, why are there so many spells? Because different people need different spells. What works for me might not work for someone else and might not work for the next person. I do a lot of candle spells now, but when I was younger, I was very nervous about fire. You know, I couldn't light the stove pilot. So I could not do a candle spell at that time because I would lose track of my goal. all I would think about is, oh my God, don't let me burn the house down. So those spells didn't work for me, but eventually I worked through that fear, and now they work. So if a spell calls for an onion and you're allergic to onions, that's not your spell. You have to find the ones that work for you. And we all have different gifts. I think these are sort of vestiges of our ancient ancestors. Some people are a little more telepathic than others.
Right.
Some people have different types of whatever your personal power is. Some people are really excellent at visualizing and some are not. You have to. It will help you find your own power, find the spells for you that work for you, find the materials that work for you. Some people work well with crystals. Some people work well with herbs. Whatever you see essentially could be used in a spell.
Now, the candles that people use, are they different colors? And each color represents something, right?
Yeah, but a lot of that is personal. You know, like a green candle is traditionally a money candle. But if gold is your color for money, I would work with the color that suits you the best, because it has to be that harmony of your mental imagery with the assorted powers of Earth. But yeah, there are some pretty standard colors, and you can always use a white candle.
How important is the spell as opposed to the individual? And by that I mean, Judica, is it maybe a process of the mind that's doing this?
Sure.
And that we are using the spell and all the incantations that go with it to make it seem like it's the spell that works, where it's really the person.
I think it's a vehicle. It's not that it seems like. I think all the trappings, the candles and the incense and everything else, they are tools that amplify our own personal power. There are spells and there are schools of spellcasting that are purely verbal. The Pennsylvania Dutch powwow traditions, they have verbal charms. You have these Russian spells that are these extremely elaborate poems. But if it's only the words, it's tiring for you to do it. In a lot of traditions, they call casting a spell working. And if you're not tired after a spell, you haven't put enough of yourself into the spell, because your mental powers and your energy and your will is really the most crucial part of the spell. Everything else is there to support you. And it is, you have to kind of, if you've done the most effective spells are often out of fear, I got my house out of foreclosure at one point. That's my big success.
Did you use a spell to do that?
Yeah, I did. We were threatened with foreclosure many years ago in California, and it was just, sometimes you have these experiences and it's too much. You cannot go there. And at that point, I literally looked around my house to find things that I could cast a spell with. And it did work, and it worked very quickly. And sometimes you'll get clues so you know that the spell worked. I think one of the most frustrating aspects of spell casting is that modern people, we're used to scientific method where you have proof that this is what turned the trick. I did A and B and C, and here's the proof that A, B, and C worked. And with spells, you can't really guarantee usually, was it my spell or would it have happened anyway? Is it a coincidence? And often there's no proof of that, which I think for modern people, it can be very, very frustrating.
All right, stay with us, Judica. We're going to take this break, then we're going to come back with much more phone calls, and we'll talk more about the big book of practical spells.